Hey, everybody, this is your host, Alex Kessler. I am talking to you because we have a sponsor today, but it's a different one. We are sponsored today by Trunk Club. They are sponsoring us, and they're sweet. They send you a box filled with personally assigned clothes. A stylist helps you pick out, and you get to pick what you like from it, and then you put it back in the box, what you don't like, and send it back, and they only charge you for the stuff you wear and keep.
It's like a loot crate for super cool fashion.
Yeah, it's great. So if you go to the link, you are supporting us. So they ship us some sweet returns on any person that uses the code that I'm going to tell you when you sign up. And so please do that. It supports the cast. They are www.trunkclub.com/invite/CYMB74. There is also a link on rocketjump.com. Please check it out. And we'll see you guys after the music.
Go ahead and just say that one more time.
Sure.
No. I meant the code.
Oh, yeah. So you go for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. What is it? It's not in front of me.
Oh, okay.
Say it again.
http://www.trunkclub.com/invite/CYMB74. But you can also just find that link on rocketjump.com.
Yep. And you'll get some sweet stuff. So you should do that.
Really cool stuff. All right. Thanks, guys. And we will see you guys after the music.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult. But prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. Your host here, Alex Kessler, with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
I want to talk about some wolves.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I'm excited. I don't even have a competitive list, but I just like this card so much that I'm going to talk about it. But we'll talk about some other stuff, too.
Yeah. So we talked about it last week, but for those who didn't listen, because it was live and
yep.
they don't like fun, a bunch of stuff was unbanned and a new set came out. And so yep. There's a bunch of sweetness happening, so much sweetness in the format right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I basically haven't stopped making lists for the last week.
Yeah, I have been brewing with a select few cards. You know me. I tend to like not want to play with the cards that are the most powerful, and
right.
I get dissuaded. But I've been paying attention and watching. And we played a bunch of games with some of your brews the other day. Definitely some sweet stuff. I have a Tezzeret list that I am going to talk about later on, but I have not perfected
sure.
to the point that I want to talk about it just yet.
So today, for those who don't know, we're doing Deck Doctor episode with the brew that I did. It's
yes.
my brew time. Normally yeah. we do Ben brews, and today it's a Kessler brew.
No,
I realized something this week.
Yes.
So like we've been kind of in a dark yes, it's been Eldrazi winter, but it's been a dark time this week or the last 3 months, just from the perspective of.
Like, modern being fun?
Modern wasn't fun. Standard was a lame duck $1,000 deck standard. Like,
right.
if you wanted to play standard, it cost someone a thousand. Like, you needed four Jaces, all of the fetch lands. It's like $1,000 decks. So standard was unaccessible.
Standard was just like modern is?
I, like, actively... Yeah, but, like, it rotates. Like,
yeah.
like if standard was, like, $1,000 to play standard, but then you got to keep that deck for years?
Right.
Sure. But it was standard where I absolutely know that this deck will not be worth what it's worth in 2 months.
Right.
And then... On top of that, you have like Oath of the Gatewatch as the limited format, which I personally was not a fan of.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Oath of the Gatewatch was just mediocre. I think Shadows of Innistrad is like super, super, super cool. I'm definitely a big fan of that. And I definitely think that there's going to be some fun decks to brew from Shadows of Innistrad. There's just a lot of really interesting cards with like a relatively high power level that are going to just go a long way. There's also, as we talked about in our top 10 episode, there's a lot of cards that got printed where like, they're interesting, and the best use for them maybe hasn't been figured out
sure.
quite yet. It's not like they just printed a better version of something we already had. It's like, you know, Asylum Visitor is really interesting. That card fits on curve in a bunch of different decks and can be played in different styles. Or mm-hmm. there's the new Delirium Search for a Creature for one green. How fast can you turn that on?
Right, like just like Gitrog is seeing like Legacy play. Thing in the Ice is nuts. Like there's all these sweet
yeah,
cards.
Exactly.
And they're not all like... Like, they're not all Treasure Cruise. They're
yeah.
not like, oh, this will go in 30 decks. But there's a lot of interesting ways to take these cards that
right.
didn't exist before.
Absolutely.
And Modern being open to larger than Sorcery 3 drops.
Yeah.
Because I've always argued that the reason Splinter Twin was a problem, though I disagree with maybe its banning, was it prevented 3 and 4 drops and 5 drops to really see that much play. Because if you tapped out for it against Splinter Twin, you lost.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we're definitely in an interesting new place where there's a lot of cool things to be done and interesting ways to play the game. Definitely a control angle. Oh, and for the record, some of the people were tweeting at me about this. My whole entire theory about Hex Parasite and Vampire Hex Mage with Thing in the Ice was incorrect. So
you're not as wrong as you think you are.
You still have to play one more spell. Yeah, which makes it bad.
Because you don't have it in your deck.
Well, it just like it adds one step to already something that was like a little bit wonky and like
sure,
like not good.
You're better off playing Thing in the Ice in decks that are
exactly. Now Chronozoa, on the other hand, I believe when you remove the last counter, it does double. So Chronozoa works, but the whole idea was that Chronozoa being a four drop was bad, but you could maybe mitigate that by the fact that you had Thing in the Ice, and that's not the case.
Sure.
Also, somebody showed me that I had looked this up and thought that you couldn't play Silver for. What the heck's the name of the wolf that I like
with
so much?
Hada Hedron. Hedron.
Yeah,
holder.
But in fact you can, because it's not on a cast trigger. It's when it becomes the target, and so even it is copied.
Hada doesn't work with heroic, but it does work with
the wolf.
The wolf.
Yeah, that's what I. That's what somebody on the internet told me, and then they sent me a description.
So it's and it's just targeted.
Yes.
But only spells.
Yes.
So not abilities. Cool.
Right.
Okay.
Which is actually totally nuts.
Sure.
Means that when I get to my wolves list, that's definitely a very interesting angle to take, because it means that like a turn four, you could just like go completely bonkers if you were playing in the right deck.
Got it. So as far as decks go for today, we have one or two fan submissions.
Yep.
We have my Tezzerator list.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a few ideas from you on werewolves.
Well, I definitely just have like a card that I kind of want to kick around and explain to people where I'm going with it. And maybe it'll get people excited and they can sort of come at me with what they think the best version of this is. Because I've been sort of trying to build some version of like a werewolves, heroic werewolves kind of deck, humans for a little while now. I haven't really been able to get to a place that I'm very happy yet, but there's a lot of really cool interactions that I want to talk about. So we'll get to that in a little bit.
Cool.
What should we start with?
Well, everyone should just right now stop what they're doing.
Yep.
Pause the podcast.
Yep.
Pull over your car if you're driving.
Yep.
Make sure your boss isn't looking at you. Take out your phone and follow us on Twitter. We're
at
the MMCast.
That was dramatic.
I know.
that's a slice of drama. We're at the MMCast. I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Kes Wiley.
And there's this really cool podcast that we both listen to called The Command Zone. And they are on rocketjump.com. That's Jimmy Wong and Josh Lee Kwai. And they're our buddies. And they do awesome Commander content. And if you guys like Commander content, or you just like having fun and getting things given away to you because they give lots of stuff away, go and listen to The Command Zone.
Yeah. They're sweet.
They're awesome. And they're funny. And they have good senses of humor. And they're great. So you guys should check that out. And then lastly, of course, we're on Patreon. We have a Patreon that we launched pretty recently. And you guys have been wonderful. It helps us do content that is beyond our normal amount of content that we do. And we're going to be ramping that up in the near future here and doing a bit more video content. We're getting really close to the streaming video level of the membership rewards.
Yeah. We posted the non-video but audio video to the... To the YouTube channel.
Yep, and we just like your guys' contributions. We were able to buy a relatively inexpensive USB mic to improve the audio quality for streaming, which was awesome. We couldn't have done that
purely
before.
Purely based off of the if you look at watch the YouTube video, it's on Webisodes Network, it's a YouTube channel.
Yep.
It's the audio is bad.
Yep. And so we had
and
to
now
buy.
Now we don't have to do that anymore. Now it'll be good.
So we had to buy a mic, and we did that because you guys helped. And then also, you all should either have your Masters of Modern playmat for those of you that signed up for the Swagbox membership. I just on our Twitter posted a picture of this month, the April Swagbox membership, which is going to be four copies of signed Geist of St. Traft foil from the dual deck,
right,
and four copies of signed Grand Architect, and we will be sending those out here shortly. So there's lots of fun stuff. There's audio messages that some of you guys still need to record and send to us to play on the podcast because you've donated.
Yep. And the big one, or not the big one, but one of the main things that everyone gets who donates after $5, I think. So not everyone, because there's a few $1 or $2 guys, which we appreciate you guys. Just you don't get this.
Oh yeah.
You get this at deck list. So when we're doing Deck Doctor episodes now, we'll only be using decks submitted by our Patreons, because that's kind of one of the cool rewards you get from being a Patreon member.
Yep.
And so today
we are going to be doing some deck doctoring stuff. Yeah.
Also, if anyone that is our Patreon donators or someone else wants to come up with a cool nickname for all of our Patreon members or just fans in general, please tweet it at us, because I think it's time we have a name for our fan group, or like people that listen to us, because I need a way to refer to everyone.
It's pretty cool.
Conveniently.
Yeah, it should be something cool, though, not just like something like really convenient.
Like disciples.
Yeah, disciples. Or
we're masters. Yeah.
We could even go really deep and try to base it off of like a bad cable movie, like The Skulls or something like that.
Oh, I love The Skulls.
Do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
With Paul Walker and Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson.
Oh my God, dude, you love that movie.
Yeah, that movie's great.
You like immediately got excited. His
best friend, like, yeah, everything about the movie is awesome.
Yeah.
It's not as great as it maybe could have been.
It's
but
a little
it's like, it's
not
perfect.
A good movie at all. Yeah, exactly. Which you remember as being good from the 90s because you were a kid.
But yeah. It's like a 90s movie.
It was like a straight to video 90s movie.
No, it wasn't. It was theatrically released.
I don't know about that.
No, I like saw it in theaters.
Oh, and then who's the third dude?
There was a sequel.
The Skulls 2.
That was straight to DVD.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Let's get into the episode.
So,
Yeah, Jeff this Bruce, is...
What do you want to do first? Do you want to talk about werewolves? Do you want to get that off your chest?
Yeah, why don't we start with that?
I'm just
going to
just not tap mana and not cast a spell this turn, and then you're going to flip over into your werewolf
I'll just
thing.
Flip over to my werewolves. So, guys, this is it all comes from my card that I love so much, the Silver Fur... what the heck is he? Silver Fur Partisan. I don't know why it's so hard to say that. Say that five times fast. Can you do it?
Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan.
Yeah, you can't do it. Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan, Silver Fur Partisan. That was five. It's pretty close. This card is amazing, I think. It's not like it's overtly powerful. If it cost two and had it was a 1/1, then it would be very powerful. But it's a 1 green, 2 colorless for a 2/2 wolf warrior with trample. Whenever a wolf or werewolf you control becomes the target of an instant or sorcery spell, put a 2/2 green wolf creature token onto the battlefield. It's a very interesting card. It has a built-in anti-getting killed by removal, which is very cool. It can get wrathed by a pyroclasm.
It definitely gets killed by removal, but the way it dies is you gain value from it.
Yeah, exactly. So you trade 3 mana for... You know, they're lightning bolt, but you're left with a 2/2 wolf, which is fine. It's not amazing, but it's interesting. Sure. And then if you build it correctly in the right deck to be able to take advantage of it, it definitely is a very interesting card. So I've been going a couple of different directions with this card. There's just like a number of different things that you can do. So the first one is you could go straight up wolves and werewolves, right? They've just like what happened with Eldrazi on a much, 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 much lower power scale. You can like, you know, there's a bunch of wolves that got printed now in the second run since Innistrad's first printing that now maybe make this more interesting. So Mare of Avabruk, for instance, is a card that I think a lot of people remember from Limited being very good. That's very interesting. It's a human and
it's
a werewolf
lord that starts producing 3/3 tokens in value.
Yeah, like it's, I mean, that card's always been right on the fringe. Like it's never been quite good enough to actually play with, but it's always been like a very cool card. Like sure. like a 2/2 that makes tokens is good. Obviously, that card and this card play very well together on curve.
Right.
So the problem with... There's Immerwolf, which people probably don't remember very well. It's a wolf
that gives werewolves and wolves +1/+1.
And Intimidate, I think. And it's a green, red, okay. 1 for a 2/2. And I think werewolves can't flip back to being humans. But it's a 3-drop. So if you compare this to, like, say, Merfolk, this is just less powerful because the curve is not quite as good and you don't have the density of lords on 2.
Sure.
Plus the 1-drops
you're
having to play.
Merfolk plays 8 2-drop lords and 3 3-drop lords.
Even the 1-drops are just, like, better. Like, just getting to play Curse Catcher. It's easier to play Mutavault because you're playing one color. Like, it's just interesting. Like, it's just better. And
sure.
Blue, like, soft control plays well with it. So going straight wolves to me is... not good enough. So the second idea that I started to come up with was, okay, obviously Silver for Partisan is like a double, he's like a double-sided heroic trigger. So the first thing you think of is if you resolve this guy on turn 3, what do you want to have in hand? You probably want to have a free spell. You probably want to have Mutagenic Growth, or you probably want to have Gutshot, one of the two. Gutshot, it goes between being playable and not playable in Modern, depending on what's happening. I think it's always going to have targets, but... it's not always...
it could be arguably playable. Now, Jund's better, which means that there are going to be more Dark Confidants out there.
Yeah.
Delver-like decks are going to be good, which leads me to believe that Delver will be good.
It kills birds.
Young Pyromancer is going to be a card in the format, most likely.
Yeah, it's solid against Infect. It's like, it kills a lot of things. Like
no, it's great against Infect.
Yeah.
It kills everything out of that deck.
Yeah, killing a Hierarch in that deck is super important.
Literally, there's not a single creature in that deck that... Gutshot doesn't kill.
Right. So Gutshot, yeah, so Gutshot is a good card. And
Infinity, it's good against Infinity.
Yeah. So, and then obviously mutagenic growth is interesting. So,
like, I'm playing Knight of Souls Betrayal right now in Jund, and yeah, like, that card just literally locks those deck out, and Gutshot's kind of like a mini.
Yeah.
Knight of Souls Betrayal.
So you can go a couple different directions. The first thought that I had was you play Mare of Avabruk in this card, and then you play a bunch of human, just a bunch of humans, and then the right spells. So my first list was like Champion of the Parish, right? And then a Crowan Crusader, which is the 1-1 for 1 that makes 1-1 haste guys when he's targeted. You play Mare. I couldn't decide what I want. Like, originally, I had a 2-drop heavy version. So I was playing the Vanguard of Brimaz, who's a 2-2 for 2 that makes 1-1 Vigilance Cats when he's targeted.
Okay.
And I was also playing Young Pyromancer. So the whole idea was that basically almost the entire deck was making tokens. And then I started, like, the tokens were the wrong creature types. The human lord thing, it felt kind of wonky. It wasn't doing what I wanted. So I do think that Young Pyromancer is interesting here, because Young Pyromancer essentially gets you the 1-1 token maker heroic trigger off of somebody else's heroic trigger, which I think is great. Okay. But ultimately, I thought that the Vanguard of Brimaz was a little bit weak, so I replaced it with Phalanx Leader,
sure,
which is the 1-1 for 2 human that when it's targeted puts a +1/+1 counter on your whole team, which then led me to start just thinking, okay, I want to play 8 Gutshots, 8 Mutagenic Growths, 4 Silver for Partisan, and 4 Phalanx Leaders. And then I want to figure out how to build around that. Because to me, it was like, I'm totally fine mutagenic growthing a Phalanx Leader in response to a bolt. It's going to save it and put a counter on my whole team. Okay. Totally fine doing the same thing to a Silver for Partisan against a bolt. It saves it, makes a 2-2, and I get a 2-2 out of their target, which is insane.
You probably could get away with like a Vines of the Vastwood.
Yeah.
Like as a one of.
Maybe.
Or that, like, the Phyrexian, I always forget what it's called, that gives protection.
Apostle's Blessing.
Apostle's Blessing.
Yeah, so the protection spell that I ended up leaning towards in a deck like this was Emerge Unscathed, which I liked better because it's 1 white, target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice at end of turn, but it has rebound. So you play it for 1 white in response to a removal spell, and then it rebounds on your next upkeep and retargets for another trigger.
Sure, sure, sure.
So basically the idea here is that you want every single spell you're playing to be free or get 2 activations. So hilariously enough, the single best card ever printed for a deck like this is Travel Preparations.
the flashback green white put +1/+1 counter on up to 2 creatures.
This card was like a total limited all star. Everybody loved this card. 1 green, 1 white, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. Flashback for 1 white, 1 colorless. So like, if you have 2 wolves on the table at the time you cast this, you're going like, okay, I'll make my 2 2-2 wolves into 3-3s, and I'll make 2 more 2-2s out of it, and then I'll flash it back, make the new 2-2s into 3-3s, and make 2 more. So by casting this and flashing it back, you're actually adding, what is it, 4, 8, 10, 12 power to the board for 4 mana?
Sure.
If you have Silver for Partisan in play.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a sorcery, and it is kind of redundant. So I think
play one of.
I think you play it as, yeah, one or two of.
Cute little singleton.
There's definitely some really interesting options. Like Thrill of the Hunt is a card that I find interesting. Its target creature gets +1/+2 for 1 green, then it flashes back for 1 white.
Okay.
So +1/+2 is good, obviously, with anything with 2 toughness. So sure. Saving it from lightning bolts. Like, it just seems good. Like saving Silver Partisan from a lightning bolt for 1, and then getting a 2-2 and their 2-2, and then having the ability to do it again.
Right.
None of this plays well against Sword of the Meek. Like, none of it. Every single one of these options is bad against that. Because if they're gaining life and putting
lots... You're green, white, so you get... Are you red?
Possibly.
So if you have a little bit of red, you get, like, the best artifact removal out there.
Yeah, and I think...
You can get Wear and Tear. You can get the...
Yeah, you can also...
Ancient Grudge.
You can also just play Stony Silence.
Stony Silence. Oh, you're white-green. You just get Stony Silence.
Stony Silence is amazing.
You should be just jamming 4 Stony Silence anyways, because you probably weak to Affinity.
So the last kind of options that I would consider here are Lagona Band Trailblazer, Lagona Band Trailblazer, which is a 1-white, 0-4 heroic when it's targeted to get a +1/+1 counter on it.
Okay.
I like this card. I've always liked this card because 0-4s in Modern, historically, just like 4 toughness is good.
Sure.
Against aggro decks, having this as a 1-drop is good. You might play this as a sideboard option, so you could side this in against aggro decks. It blocks really well and gets big surprisingly fast. Like,
okay.
If you just think about, like, it's a 0-4, as soon as it gets targeted twice and it's up to 2-6, mm-hmm. this just will block Tarmogoyfs. Like, and it's a 1-drop.
Right.
It's like not going to be hard. So if you're playing things like Travel Preparations, another card that I think is interesting is Aurelia's Fury, right? So people don't remember this card probably. It's 1 red, 1 white X. Aurelia's Fury deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and players. Tap each creature dealt damage this way. Players dealt damage this way can't cast non-creature spells this turn. Okay, so X is 0, but I'm still targeting all of my creatures for 0.
Even if X is 2, you can silence your opponent.
Yeah.
Make all your creatures big and kill a thing.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you, for two mana, can target every single creature on your whole side, and if you have, like, three or
four... How positive are you that that's exactly how that works?
I'm pretty positive. This is one of those things where, like...
Internet, let us know if that works or not.
Yeah, if somebody's listening, you're like, that's definitely not true, then let me know. But the way that it's worded, where it says, tap each creature dealt damage this way, leads me to believe...
You can target them without doing damage to them, letting them not... tap, but you get the trigger.
But that is something I'm unclear on. So my point is, Dromoka's Command is another really good card with this whole thing. It's green and a white. You get two targets potentially of your own creatures if you need it, but it's very versatile.
Sure.
It acts as a removal spell and a pump spell. Another card that I think is very interesting here is Fists of the Ironwood, which is definitely a little bit loose, but if you think about what you're trying to do as far as going wide with Phalanx Leader and pumping your team,
sure.
It's one green, one colorless for an aura. Enchant creature gets trample when it enters the battlefield. Put 2/1/1 saplings into play.
How good would the spider and the other one? I don't know what the
which
the,
spider
the white one. Not spider. It's not a spider. It's a umbra. The umbras go in this deck.
They're not great because they're not cheap enough. So you
they're one drops.
You're talking about Hyena Umbra and
Spider Umbra.
Yeah, I mean, you still get...
They're boggle staples because they, like, it makes it so board wipes don't wreck you as hard.
Yeah, but you would... I think if you were going to play a one-drop aura, if you were going to play a one-drop aura, you would just play Rancor. Just because you'd still get a trigger and it's trample.
So on that note, why not just play...
Rancor?
Boggles.
Well, sure. Obviously. Boggles is harder to... It's harder for opponents to interact with.
Sure.
But you're trying to go over the top with one creature, whereas
Oh, and boggles get locked out pretty much by the new... Well, I guess they get trample.
Yeah. Yeah, the other cool thing about this, the whole idea of these all of these things triggering on target, sure, means you don't actually worry about Spellskite so much. They can resolve a Spellskite against you, and they can steal your mutagenic growth, but it doesn't change
the
fact
target.
You still get the 1/1 counter, or you still get the 2/2 creature. So it actually is pretty good in that sense because of how bad Boggles can be against Spellskite.
Right.
Which I like. The whole Fist of the Ironwood plan is more in the vein if you go with a bunch of one drops. Like, you can also play the favorite Hoplite for one, the 1/2. And whenever he's targeted, he prevents all damage dealt to him this turn and he gets a counter. So if you consider, like, Fist of the Ironwood as a two drop, if you play a Crowing Crusader or that guy, like, he comes down on turn two, makes your one drop bigger or makes you a 1/1 token, gives you two more 1/1s, at which point on turn three, if you resolve, like, Phalanx Leader, and then you just have mutagenic growth. It's like, okay, so now I attack with my 4/1/1s. Maybe you even have a gut shot as well. Burn two spells and attack you for like 14 on turn three.
Right.
Like, you can do some pretty cool stuff if you go with Fist of the Ironwood. I don't know. This is what I mean when I say I'm not going to submit this as a deck that anybody should build necessarily, unless you can come up with a better way to build it. Because for me, it's right on the edge of just not being quite good enough. It's just like when I do the sample draws, I'm just not happy with the way it comes out. But
this is more you, like, you're lobbing a basketball to the community and asking some amount of help in developing this list, and this is something we can all work together on.
Like, I'm basically just figuring Silver for Partisans is just a good card. That card in general is just good. And you have free spells, and I just really like the idea of getting to play 4 Phalanx Leader, 4 Silver for Partisan, 4 Gutshot, 4 Mutagenic Growth, and then build around it. Like, not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure, like, what the best method to play here is.
Okay.
Maybe Fists of the Ironwood is like a super interesting card. Like, it's.
I like if Aurelia's Fury acts the way you say it does, I like that a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you can really target the whole board.
Right.
The reason I like Fists is just because, like, you get whatever your heroic trigger is, as well as 2/1/1s for 2 mana. So you're probably, like, can you, like, okay. Imagine putting a Fist of the Ironwood on a Phalanx Leader. Like, you're triggering +1/+1 for the whole board, and you're getting 2 additional 1/1s.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say on this whole entire rant. Obviously, these colors, you probably would be playing Lightning Bolts and Path to Exiles. There's, like, a lot of options. You can play Monastery Swift Spear. You could be playing Nicotl. Like I said, Young Pyromancer, I think, is interesting. Monastery Mentor is another card that kind of fits the similar bill. The only issue is I just like the, what's it called? I like the Silver for Partisan in the deck better because Swift Spear can just get, Monastery Mentor can just get taken out the turn you cast it.
Sure.
And you still get something out of the other guy. So, yeah, that's that idea. Let's move on to the next idea.
Yeah. All right, so the next list, zombies. because werewolves and now zombies. Werewolves and zombies. All right, this one's from Tom Aranga. I'm actually just going to read his message because the mood we're in right now. Just became a patron. I'm so happy to support the show. I've been brewing this sweet zombie deck, and I'd love for you guys to take a look. I like blue-black mainly because I have the mana base and would love some guidance as to the creature selection and sideboard, but I am open to magnanimous judgment. Some noble combos. I'm going to Diagraph Colossus, Gravecrawler, and Nantukuhust, Prize Amalgam, and Geroff's Masterpiece. Stockpile and everything. Thanks so much. All right, so looking at the list, right now it's playing, you know, 4 Gravecrawler, 4 Relentless Dead, 1 Geroff's Messenger, 1 Scab Ruinator, 2 Liliana's Heretical Healer, 2 Nantukuhust, 4 Diagraph Colossus, 4 Prized Amalgam, 1 Geroff's Masterpiece, 1 Great Merchant of Asphaled, 4 Thoughtseize, 3 Necromancer's Stockpile, 4 Compelling Deterrence, 3 Gifts Ungiven, lands, Ghost Quarter Island, Westvale Abbey of the One of, 2 Cavernous Souls, Dragon Catacombs, Gomes, Nykthos, Watery Gave, Polluted Delta, and a bunch of sweet sideboard cards. All right, so first off, talking about the new cards, Prized Amalgam, card sweet. Everyone should try them out. Got to try them in Dredgevine at some point. But Geroff's Masterpiece is kind of the other new card here. And I actually really like them in these kind of zombie decks, especially if you're doing stuff where you can have some type of discard outlet with him or use him as that discard outlet. You can gain so much value by just ditching Gravecrawlers. I do think, I know that it's technically not a zombie, but this is a deck definitely that Bloodghast has a home in. It works so well with so many of your cards. And a lot of your cards can kind of get away with taking advantage of it. And the other thing I would say is you probably want more Grey Merchants and more Geroff's Messengers. You probably can pick up Orborg right now for not as... it's still expensive because of the Eldrazi hype train, but I think it's gone down. So now is the time to kind of maybe think about picking it up, especially if Eldrazi doesn't do anything with the card in the future. Because with Geroff's Messenger, you can do a lot of cool things with Grey Merchant and just get in a lot of damage. On that note, I don't love Scab Ruinator. I think it just is a worse Geroff's Masterpiece because you have to exile so many things from your graveyard, and almost all of these things you want to keep in your graveyard. The other interesting things, I think Gifts might be a little... be okay, but I think you can get better with... What's the zombie enchantment where you discard 2 cards and get a 2-2?
Where you discard
2 cards and you get a 2/2 zombie. It's an enchantment, 1 black.
Zombie Infestation.
Zombie Infestation. Yeah. I think Gifts could be Zombie Infestation just because, or actually, really, I think Necromancer Stockpile should be Zombie Infestation. It lets you discard your Gravecrawlers that you're going to get value back on. It lets you use Relentless Dead. It lets you take advantage of all these cards that are good in your graveyard. That it's worth kind of playing that game, I think. Would you agree? And then I do want to say that I love the Westvale Abbey, and I almost want to say you need to play 5. That's one of the reasons I said Bloodghast would be really good in this deck, and it's not there already. If you can get just the Bloodghast plus Gravecrawlers plus Prize Amalgams, like all in the play, and then just sack the Westvale's Abbey to them every turn, that's really sick.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with you there. Like, zombies play really well with Westvale Abbey, obviously. I still think that in... I don't know.
If on turn 5 you have Westvale Abbey, I guess turn 6 you have Westfield Abbey.
Yeah.
And like by turn 6 in zombies, you better have 5 creatures. And the problem with zombies is often they don't have a way kind of close it out because they're all like 2/2 ground pounders that get locked out by Tarmogoyf.
Right.
But like if you're now able to sack them for a
gigantic
giant 9/7 flying lifelink.
Is it 9/7 or 7/9?
I'm not sure, but either one is really good.
yeah, that's true.
Because also has lifelink and I think it's definitely something to try into. So yeah, like the big change.
I mean, keep in mind, you also have to hit, you're saying on turn 6, that means that you've hit a land drop every turn, by the way.
But like the point is that this is a land. It costs you nothing.
Yeah, it's a 9/7.
And you're not really playing that many other man lands. Like I don't think... this is like a tribal deck that Mutavault's not just going to be amazing in.
Yeah, true.
Because like you can't get it out from the graveyard. It's not a zombie in your graveyard. So what's it really
doing for you?
Where like, because like you're playing Diagraph Colossus, which seems really sweet, especially if you're discarding stuff the zombies. Like I think there's just a lot of cool things.
I really like Diagraph Colossus.
That card was really sweet.
That card was like right on the edge of being where I wanted it for our top 10s.
Sure.
I think that card was sweet.
I mean, I've been talking a while now for Dreadvine's list how good Splinter Freight is, and this does a lot of really similar things. Of just it's like a giant 3-drop.
Yep.
And the bigger your 3-drop, the better.
So funny how good 3-drops just generally are in Modern. There's so many good 3-drops.
They're a power level. Yeah, it's really sick. That's why, like, I was talking about Scabruinator and cutting it. I don't think it's worth it, but I do think your Off's Messengers are. Especially if you're playing the Great Merchant plan. I think you go up to 2 Great Merchants.
And 5-drop in Modern.
Yeah, but you win when you cast it. Yeah. You literally win when it comes into play.
I hear that.
And, like, that's why you want all of the pips from Garrosh's Messenger, Relentless Dead, Bloodghasts. Like,
right.
That's a lot of very easy life gain to get from that. And like the things I would cut, I don't like Gifts Ungiven. I don't love Necromancer Stockpile. As I said, I'm not a big fan of Scabruinator. I almost even want to say you could probably get away with just one Liliana of the Veil.
I don't know how much I hate playing Hallor one Leader. Gifts. I think Gifts is clever in this deck because you get so much value out of your graveyard.
Sure.
Like it ends up
if you just get like Garrosh's Masterpiece, Garrosh's Masterpiece, Prize Amalgam, even like Gravecrawler and Bloodghast. That's just like.
It's definitely one of those things where you don't have to use Gifts in that backwards way where you're going 2 cards in the yard. It's you definitely get some value out of actually playing Gifts and getting playing it correctly.
On your note, by the way, on the Westfield Abbey, as far as mana, this deck is also playing 2 Nykthos,
which
I do think is. I think you go down to 1 Nykthos and 2 Abbey maybe, and maybe that's the real play.
I'm telling you, like one of 2 things is going to happen.
This deck definitely needs Urborg though.
I'm going to either
get looking at what your list looks like, you need like 2 or board minimum.
I'm either going to play against Westfield Abbey a couple times and get totally blown out, and I'm going to be like, all hail, this card's amazing. Or I'm going to play it in a deck because I get convinced that it's good, and I'm going to lose in a tournament, and I'm going to be like, I swear to never play this card again.
But there's no way it's going to lose you the game. It's just a land that produces value.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
Like,
yeah.
Well, think of it this way. The green, white, tap, make a token.
Right.
That's a card. This is...
The green, white, tap, make a token?
Yeah. It's a land.
Oh, you're talking about the one from Ravnica?
Yeah, the one from Ravnica.
Way back?
Yeah. Great in Standard, good in other formats. Doesn't see play in Modern. I'll give you that. But this is like much better. Partly because it goes in decks that don't have access to token making like that. This in like a deck that like just needs something for late game, just value that it gets that I now have a late game plan that I can get to if I need to
from a land. Yeah, I mean it is true. Like they're historically, anytime they've ever printed overpowered things on lands, it's usually a problem.
Right. It's usually good if it's good on land. The other thing is it's not legendary, so you can play as many as you want.
Right.
And lastly, this land, like. Minimum, like, well, what's the cost? Like, I guess the point is like. The other thing, things are good are things that are good early and good late. This is good early and good late. Because early, it's a land.
Yeah.
it comes to play untapped.
Yeah.
Late, it's possibly a hasty 9/7. Worst case scenario, it's an expensive Bitter Blossom.
Are you sure that it's hasty? You can play it and sack. Haste. It has haste. When it flips, it has haste?
I think it has haste when it flips.
Okay, you keep talking. I'll look.
In fact, I'm pretty I'm almost positive it has haste just from the perspective of they like doing that now for cards that are weird because they don't want you to get confused.
It does have haste.
It doesn't matter. It's a land, so like it'll most likely be hasty anyways. Because
unless you play it that turn.
Yeah. Right. And that's why they do it because it's confusing sometimes.
Yes, of course.
Kind of happens.
All right. I mean, that's interesting. Yeah, I would love to see a zombies list be competitive in Modern. It's very cool. Like
I also don't know if you want 4 Relentless Dead. I think Relentless Dead is good, but I think this is more of a 2 of than a 4 of. I'd rather have more Bloodghasts than 2 Relentless Deads.
Well, yeah, Relentless Dead in this deck plays differently than it should. Relentless Dead plays really, really well in a really aggressive zombies deck.
This is pretty aggressive. Especially if you do the game plan with the zombie sack enchantment that I can never remember what it's called. Zombie infestation? Because like
that's discarding cards though.
Sure, but you discard a bunch of Bloodghasts and Gravecrawlers, and then you just play a land and you get all the Bloodghasts back that then bring back like a prized amalgam that then lets you get your Gravecrawlers back. That's like a turn 3.
What are the best one drop zombies? There's the Diagraph Ghoul, like, right? There's Diagraph Ghoul, there's Gravecrawler,
Diagraph Ghoul's bad. The only one I can think of that's okay is the one that has Unearth.
The one that has Unearth.
It's a 2/1 for it's a 2-drop for it's a bear or a piker, goblin piker.
Right.
1 black colorless for a 2/1, but you can Unearth it for 1 black.
Got it.
And it's kind of was the old way, and now that Prize Amalgam exists, it doesn't.
You keep calling it Amalgam.
What is it?
It's Amalgam.
Amalgam.
Amalgam. Okay.
All right. So that's kind of what I have to say about the list. Do you have any other notes, like any sweet zombie cards that we're not thinking of? I don't know how much Nantuko. I guess Nantuko Husk is sweet. It's just expensive for a 3-drop, and you'll just get blown out.
It doesn't.
Yeah,
do.
I actually don't love Nantuko Husk.
It doesn't do what you want to do.
It's so bad against Lightning Bolt when the rest of your deck makes Lightning Bolt so bad that having this bright red target for removal seems really dangerous.
Yeah.
I definitely think, get rid of the Scabs. Get rid of the Husk. Get rid of the Scab Ruinator. Go down on Relentless Dead. Go down on Gifts, but not down all the way. And get rid of Necromancer Stockpile. And then just up the game on Bloodghast, on Zombie Infestation. Two Zombie Infestation, four Bloodghast. Up your Garrosh Messengers. Go to 2 Gray Merchants. And your deck could be very, very scary.
Gray Merchant's one of those cards where it's counterintuitive to put a lot of faith in it in Modern because it's sorcery speed 5-drop. But as we remember from Standard, and also what this deck does and what zombies do, is that they will grind you to a point in the game where the battlefield is relatively even and you do want a Haymaker because you run the top end on zombies does run out. Like, it's recursive engines are great, but if you're
this has 4 Thoughtseize and 4 Compelling Deterrent, so it has some amount of hand disruption and creature removal. So you have a way to survive to that 5-drop position.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you cast this as a 5-drop, in this deck especially, you should be just doming them for 10 and winning completely. The game.
Yeah, so I'm into that. I think that's a good...
And you have Cavernicles, so you're not getting blown up by counterspells
with it,
because you're naming zombies, so you're fine.
How does this deck do against Sword of the Meat combo? Does
it have not bad. I mean, Sword of the Meat combo is slow.
And you can get Thopter.
I think this has
Foundry
a problem with the
Time
Sea versions, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah,
but,
right.
you get Thoughtseize part of it. You have some answer to it. Sword of the Meat's not going to kill you quickly. And this can grind them out.
Right.
Yes, they can start just blocking all your dudes when you crack in, but all your guys are so resistant. I actually think this has a pretty decent game against it.
Hmm.
Just partly because of Great Merchant. I think that's why Great Merchant is important, because it's a nice way to go over, and you can get a really aggressive start with this deck. I'm trying to think what the most aggressive is, but I think it's just turn one, Gravecrawler.
Right.
Turn two, Zombie Infestation, discarding. So at that point you have... So there's 3-4 cards in play. You've drawn 2, so you have 5 cards. Discarding... Bloodghast, Prize Amalgam, and Prize Amalgam. Just all that.
Sure.
And then just play a land on your next turn.
And
Bloodghast comes back. You have 2/2/2 zombies, 3/3/3s, and
So Prize Amalgam, let me just read the text on this card.
Wait, how much is that? 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think you named 5 Prize Amalgams, maybe.
No, it should be 3 anyways, because you need a land. this is a weird hole to go down. But still, it sounds sick. I'm down with this deck.
Yeah, I mean, Prize
Amalgam. That's a lot of damage on turn 3.
Yeah, well, you're not... Prize Amalgam's not attacking, though, on turn 3.
No, sure.
Yeah, so sure. It's... I mean, turn 4, it represents a lot of damage. They can still do something by turn 4.
Sure.
They can just wrath it if they're playing some control-y deck.
Yeah, which is more common nowadays. But
yeah.
Bloodghast. Actually, Wrath is terrible against you. That's another reason to play this deck.
Because you get everything back.
Yeah, because I mean, just
true.
Good Wrath, bro, and then you just
play a land. That is true. I like that. Yeah, I think you're right about the Bloodghasts. Go up on the Bloodghasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just important for this deck.
Yeah.
It sucks that they're vampires, but it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, definitely it's off. Because I mean, the other way you could try to take zombies if you're going to try to go a little more traditional is you could go with the Lord's Plan. How many zombie lords are there? There's
a chunk, but they're all 3-drops. There's no 2-drop.
There's
lords,
the blue black 2/2, right? There's the blue black 2/2 from Innistrad, Diagraph Captain. There's Lord of the Undead or something.
Yeah,
all
skeletons
and zombies.
Zombies and one other thing get +1/+1.
And is there also zombie? There's one more, I think.
Yeah, I think there's one more.
But they're all 3-drops.
Yeah, there's two more. There's the zombie guy who you can tap to make zombies.
Yeah, but they're all 3-drops, which is not good enough for Modern.
Right.
Yeah. So this is definitely
you can get away with one 3-drop that combos. Mare Rejury.
I get the feeling that this and Mare Rejury, if you've played Merfolk, you know how ridiculously good the untapped
is. It's a combo card. Yeah.
For
all intents and purposes, that card costs 2.
Yeah. I will say that I don't think that this deck will be competitive enough in this environment. And the reason is because a lot of what you're doing...
Oh, I completely forgot. Sorry, continue.
I was going to say, a lot of what you're doing here, the sort of recursive engine type of stuff, is not getting you through. It doesn't push damage through.
Well, that's why I think Grey Merchant's great. Important.
Yeah, Grey Merchant Messenger gets you get it done. But aside from that, it's
yeah. But you go wide. Like there's so like eventually yeah, if you're swinging true. Every turn with like six creatures,
it's true.
How many decks can block six creatures on turn four?
Well, because if they get Thopter combo, they just beat you.
You're still getting in with two creatures a turn, and you're getting stuff, and you're trying to get. And at that point, you're going for the Grey Merchant plan.
Yeah, true.
I do think. That there was one other thing. Oh, the new land, Draenor Temple. I think you need to play at least one because of the blood gas.
Because
if you bring the blood gas in,
yeah.
Like literally everything in the deck can then just be bought from your graveyard.
Yeah, that's sweet. And also, if you go with the zombie infestation plan,
yeah,
get it back.
Sweet,
seems good.
All right, next deck.
Next deck.
Ready? You ready?
Yeah.
So first off, thanks, Aranga. Tom. Thanks, Tom Aranga.
Yeah, thanks,
super
man.
Appreciated. Deck was sweet.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
You're a Patreon dude. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like our favorite type of dude.
Yeah. Should we talk about your deck or Matthew Robertson's deck?
Let's do Matthew Robertson's deck.
Okay. I'm going to talk about Matthew Robertson's deck. Guys, here's a brew I've been working on with Thing in the Ice. As with most things, it looks best in team or colors. The thing about the Thing is that its drawback doesn't much matter to haste critters. I've thought about Ancestral Visions, but as sweet as drawing three cards is, I'm not convinced that it is fast enough, especially if there's an uptick in cards like Remand and Delay. Here's the list. 12 creatures. 4 Goblin Guide, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, and you guessed it, 4 Thing in the Ice. A pretty standard suite of lands. It looks like he's playing 3, 7, 11, 13, 15, only 18 lands. But that is because the deck just plays all of the spells, and they're all cheap. So 2 Faithless Looting, 4 Snag, 4 Metamorphose, a Teemer Battle Rage, Become Immense, 2 Vines of the Vastwood, 2 Fork Bolt, 4 Lightning Bolt, 2 Spell Pierce, 2 Vapor Snag, 4 Probe, and 4 Mutagenic Growth. So we will post this list as is on the Rocket Jump page for you guys to review.
Oh yeah, same as the zombie list.
First thought, this needs visions, and also...
Sure. So in response to his visions comment, yes, the metagame is going to be a little bit more resistant to the card visions as it normally is.
Yes.
But Faithless Looting seems sweet.
Yeah, I think what you probably do here is...
Also, that card is, like, yes, against some opponents, it's going to not work, but against the ones that are going to, like, really hurt you because they'll have creature removal for your Thing in the Ice and your minimal threats. Like,
right.
It lets you just refill back to more threats.
Yeah, I mean it's a little funky here, right? So, like, the first thing you notice is that there's two spell pierces and no other counter magic, which is like, I just don't know how important it is to have two copies of spell pierce in this deck unless you're going to have more than two.
I like Remand more anyways.
Yeah.
Like I think Remand just, it draws you into more spells. It will stop the visions of your opponent and generally decks that have a lot of removal. Yeah. It'll let you buy the time you need.
I mean, I'm with you on the whole efficiency thing. I definitely like cards that cost one more than cards that cost two. I'm talking with you, Matthew Robertson.
Yeah.
And Spell Pierce is awesome. And the idea of just getting your opponent sometimes, like just having it.
On that note, I also think Goblin Guide is a mistake here. And
okay.
It should be Young Pyromancer.
Interesting.
Young Pyromancer, yes, it's a 2-drop.
Yeah.
I get it. But like the rest of your deck, if you land it and you have any way of casting more spells...
You go wide so
you
fast.
You go wide so quickly. It's kind of like your thing. Then you have like 4 Thing in the Ice, 4 Young Pyromancer, and both of them work really well.
But
in
his
similar
theory,
ways.
Matthew's theory though, is that if you go wide with your Pyromancer, you make all your tokens that turn, and then your Thing flips and it returns all the tokens and the Pyromancer to your hand to attack.
If you flip a Thing, you're winning. And if you have that many Young
that's
Pyromancer
not
tokens,
true.
You
that's
just keep cracking.
Definitely
and
not true.
Spells.
Flipping Thing is sweet, but like you flip it and then they just path it, or like you flip it and they like I don't know. I don't think that's entirely true.
I get the reasoning, but I also think that
right
like sometimes overt power level is worth the like weird awkward position you might be in sometimes where you don't want to flip your Thing.
Yeah, I mean I get that because also if you have turn 2 Pyromancer but you don't have Thing in the Ice and then you turn 3 like you get like 6 more power on the table. I mean, with the way this is set up with 4 Mutagenic Growth, 4 Gataxian Probe and 4 Metamorphose,
right.
You could very easily have a turn on turn 3 where you get a billion power.
Right.
So yeah, I'm with you there. I guess.
And like the situation where you're like, oh, I have my Thing in the Ice or I have my Young Pyromancer. Well, then you just swing with your Young Pyromancer if you need to flip your Thing in the Ice.
Yeah.
Then you swing with Young Pyromancer and it dies because they'll trade and then you flip your Thing in the Ice and you punish them for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a thing that's happening here. No pun intended.
Where removal, right?
Yeah, there's 4 lightning bolts. I mean, The weird, here's like the weird card choices to me. This is what jumps out. Okay, first of all, 18 lands is cheap, but I get it. You're playing a lot of ways to get
yeah,
to.
I think that's fine. What's the most expensive card is a 2-drop, and everything else is free.
So that jumps out at me. The second thing is you're only so here's
become immense, but
you're playing two copies of Faithless Looting, one Temur Battle Rage, one Become Immense, two Spell Pierce. Those are the ones that jump out at me as strange. So,
actually, you know what I'm thinking. We have six Vapor Snags, but I think Vapor Snag needs to be...
There's six Vapor Snags. Oh, yeah, it's in here twice.
I think he mentions that, but I do think that one of the easy fixes to that is the thing you talked about, the protect a creature from a color, that one.
The one I was talking about?
So like...
No, Apostle's Blessing.
Apostle's Blessing in this deck seems really good because of Abrupt Decay. Like, this deck is really loose to Abrupt Decay, but if you have, like, one card that costs one mana to kind of get them sometimes,
copies of Vines? He's got Vines in here.
Who's got Vines in there?
He's got two copies of Vines. I think you would just play more Vines. Yeah, either play more Vines or you could play... either play more Vines... Or you could play Ranger's Guile, which is good, too. But Vines is better against your opponent's creatures, because you can use Vines... you can use Vines against Infect... defensively, so they can't target their own things.
Sure.
So I probably would just play more Vines if I was going to do it. I don't know. I guess the one Temur Battle Rage and
changes my tune.
The one Become Immense and the one Temur Battle Rage, like those are just both entirely because you have Thing in the Ice and you just want to flip it and just win, right? That's the idea.
Yeah, they're both just really good.
You just figure you just... but just
they're also really good together. If you draw two, you're like going to win.
Right.
Like both of those on a 1-1 token is... 14 damage.
Yeah, you almost look at this list and you're like, you could kind of shape this towards the Death Shadow Zoo lists if you played the lands right. You could just like replace one of the early creatures, like. But then you start
get rid of Swift Spear and get rid of Goblin Guide and put Young Pyromancer and Death Shadow in there and just.
Yeah, it's like different though. It's a different deck. I don't know. I mean, I'm into this. I do think that because of the Faithless Lootings, you just up to four Faithless Lootings. I don't know that you have to play necessarily four Visions. Maybe you play four Visions. The thing is, drawing Visions in the middle of a Storm Chain to try to is so bad that if you don't have the Faithless Looting,
it lets you get through, I guess, and it does do damage to them. I like Vapor Snag in this deck.
No, I said.
Oh, Visions. Sorry, I'm sorry. Yeah. Visions. I think Visions is good.
I just think it's just generally good
because I think Jund's going to be a deck that's going to show up a lot more often because it's so good against artifact decks. There's going to be so many grindy control decks that having a way to refill your hand with just ways to keep going.
Yeah,
I do think Faithless Looting is important in the deck,
right?
Because you can discard your extra Faithless, your extra Visions,
right?
And I'd even say like it's probably too expensive, and so never mind. But Goblin Dark Dwellers maybe out of the side with some extra lands,
yeah,
maybe make your deck a little bit grindier.
I get that.
It's not the worst idea. Also out of the side because you have some kind of the storm plan, maybe like. Is there enough for it empty the warrens, you think?
Maybe. I mean, you have the 12 free spells. So
right.
Like you could if you just get to hit empty the warrens for storm 2 and you get 6 1/1s for 4 mana, it might be enough to just win. I do sort of think that if you're going to go with the Young Pyromancer plan, I don't know, there might be a better or more correct card that goes wide and like pluses up your whole board by one or something like that. I'm not sure what that card would be in this deck, but it would probably be. Do you have access? Yeah, you could be playing a Tarkus Command. You could play like one or two of a Tarkus Command.
Oh, okay.
That might be.
Yeah, like a one of a Tarkus, especially if you go with the Young Pyromancer plan.
If you go with the Young Pyromancer plan,
then you can give +1/+1 to all your 1/1s and just wreck
yeah,
them.
And three. Like yeah, three yeah. damage plus like. That seems pretty sweet. Young Pyromancer is just a sweet card. That's
sure.
good.
And you can kind of ritual it with it too, because you can use +1/+1 everything and then play a land.
Yeah.
And then you can use that land to play another spell and just keep getting there.
Exactly.
Cool. All right. So.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the gist of it. I do love the idea of playing the one of. Oh, and then the sideboard. Spreading Seas, Seas Claim. Arlan Cord. There's the one Arlan Cord in the sideboard. I love it. I don't know. I don't know if Arlan Cord, like one of sideboard. Like I guess I see where you're going. Like, just be grindier.
I definitely like that as like just an answer to grind decks. It's really good against Abrupt Decay.
Yeah,
because it's 4-drop.
Yep.
Abrupt Decay is weakness, and technically it's good against Jund. On top of that, because it's good against Inquisition or Kozilek too.
Right.
For the same reason.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't hate it. Yep. But with sideboard, something I always recommend, especially in Brews, is always make sure when you add a sideboard card, you know the cards you're taking. Like, say you add a sideboard card for a matchup or a few matchups.
Yeah.
Know the exact cards you're taking out in those matchups.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise you shouldn't be in your sideboard.
Yeah, otherwise you run out of time.
So make sure all the cards you have in your sideboard. Like, I see Tarmogoyfs here, and I'm not exactly sure where those Tarmogoyfs would be great matchup-wise. And there might be a reason. I just don't know them.
Okay.
All right. One last list. Thank you.
Thank you to Mr. Robertson, Matthew Robertson. We appreciate you submitting a deck, and we will continue to read your deck submissions and anyone else who wants to submit that is on the Patreon. So let's keep going.
All right, so I got a spicy brew.
Okay.
And it's tested. I've played it against decks.
This is your Tezzeret list?
Yeah, this is the Tezzerator list.
A sweet list.
So,
yes.
For all who don't know,
okay,
Thopter Boundary and Sword of the Meek is a combo. As is Spellskite, as is Engineered Explosives plus Academy Ruins, as is Teleria West for Academy Ruins, as is all the hotness. All right, so basically the deck, the way it works is it's playing all six Tezzerets. It's playing four, or sorry, it's playing five. It's playing three Tezzeret Agent of Bolas.
Oh, you chopped it down?
Yeah,
after
I dropped it to one.
After
we
had the six conversation, you were cackling like a madman.
It was actually pretty fine, but there was a lot of times I would dest and it would just, like, my hand would be glutted with Tezzerets.
Yeah.
I'm fine with the two different ones. I'm fine with playing Tezzeret Agent of Bolas, drawing a card, and then making a 5/5 creature or making a 5/5 creature or whatever, and then just casting Tezzeret after that. But Tezzeret the Seeker literally lets, like, if you can untap with it, you win the game. So the way this deck works is it plays Time Sieve. For those who don't know, it just bumped up expense-wise, but Time Sieve is a blue and a black for an artifact. Sacrifice five artifacts, take an extra turn after this one,
right,
and you tap it. So the way this works with Thopter Foundry and Sword of the Meek is if you have Time Sieve, Sword of the Meek, and Thopter Foundry,
right,
and five open mana, you have infinite turns.
That's how it works? It's an actual infinite combo?
Yeah. Because you make five tokens.
Right.
Technically, I think you can do it with four mana. So you make four tokens. You sacrifice the sword and the four tokens.
Right.
Get an extra turn. Untap. Make four tokens. Sack the sword.
Sure.
Sack them. Get an extra turn. Do it again and again and again and again. And your opponent never untaps.
So this is why Time Sieve jumped the price that it did?
Yes.
It's like 20 bucks
and
now.
And Tezzeret. So the way it goes, I'm playing four Sword of the Meek, four Thopter Foundry. So if I get Tezzeret,
wait, what happened to the sweet, the what's it called plan, the equipment searcher?
Oh, that's in a different deck.
Oh, that's in the other deck.
Yeah, that's blue white red.
Got it.
That's a different brew that we'll talk about in the future.
Different time.
You only let me do one today. All right, so I'm gonna go through the list so far. So in the threat category, we have three Hangerback Walker.
Okay.
Two Time Sieve.
Yep.
Four Sword of the Meek.
Okay.
Four Thopter Foundry.
Yep.
And three Tezzeret Agent of Bolas.
How many Mox Opals is the deck playing?
Two.
Okay.
Two. Okay, so as far as ramp goes, you have two Mox Opals, three Talisman of Dominance, which is generally better than Dimir Signet, and then one Dimir Signet.
Okay.
That's like a life gain constraint, and I'm actually not 100% sure which one I for sure like better, though I like Talisman more because you can kind of use it to keep playing spells.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm usually of the belief that Talismans are underplayed.
And this deck has so many colorless cards that the life loss is not as detrimental.
Right.
You have, as far as interaction. So what's really interesting in this deck is because you have Tezzerets, you can, and you have like a decent amount of card draw that I will get to, you can play a lot of one of good spells. So two Spellskites.
Yes.
One Ensnaring Bridge,
yeah,
which just wrecks Merfolk,
yeah,
which is a problem normally because you're a blue player, but Ensnaring Bridge wrecks them.
Yeah.
So the cool thing about Ensnaring Bridge also is with Thopter Foundry combo, they can't attack you. But you can attack them because you can draw a card, attack with all your 1/1s, and then play it, and then they can't get in.
Right.
And this because this deck has so much mana ramp, like it's playing seven mana ramp spells.
Yeah.
And only one Ensnaring Bridge. So normally you're really casting your Ensnaring Bridge off of playing a Tezzeret.
Right.
So like generally your hand is pretty empty. And your bigger problem isn't like an army. It's like big dudes. So stopping a big dude from killing you is really important. Back to removal. Engineered Explosives.
Another one of your favorites.
Another one of my favorites. And what's cool about that is literally just Academy Ruins and Engineered Explosives beats like 50% of the field.
Yeah, it's so good.
And then Teleria West lets you tutor for parts of that combo.
Right.
Which you play two of. Pithing Needle.
Another sweet card.
Just good. It's like the only way you can beat Tron.
Well, it's also good against... I mean, it's bad against your own Sword of the Meek combo, but
sure,
it's good against their Sword of the Meek combo.
Sure, 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 sure.
But you can sack it. You can sack it. Well, yeah, you can't.
You
can sack your own sort of...
You can sack it with time sieved.
Yeah, exactly. Then it turns theirs back on.
Slaughter Pact.
Sweet.
So that's definitely a Tolaria West. So if people don't know what Tolaria West does, because it's not a card that everyone really knows, it was in the Amulet Bloom decks, but it's a land, comes to play tapped, produces one blue mana, but you can transmute it for one and two blue, and you can search for any zero drop.
Yeah, Tolaria West.
So Slaughter Pact is a spell you can get with it. Yep. And you can also, it's really important partly because you can play it after, like it's basically a sorcery speed three drop removal spell, but right. That you can use as a tutor.
Yeah, decks that do this sort of thing are generally a little slow. Like the whole Tolaria West into Slaughter Pact thing has been a thing that's existed for a long time.
Sure.
We've both brewed with it. It's very fun. It makes you feel really clever to do. It is often a little bit slow. Same with the Academy Ruins loops. Like these are all like dinky dunk, fun blue black things.
Sure.
But they, yeah, well, it remains to be seen.
I would say the Engineer Explosive Academy Ruin loop is not. That's like a very powerful thing. Just you have to have a reason to be playing Academy Ruins.
You just don't see it very often in top tier decks. You just almost never see it.
Because Academy Ruins hasn't seen that much play in Modern. Because there hasn't been really a reason to other than Engineer Explosives.
But now, yeah.
There is. Because exactly. Academy Ruins... So the other important part of Academy Ruins is it lets you get back parts of your combo if they get rid of it.
Right.
Which is really important. Executioner's Capsule, literally just an artifact removal spell that Tezzeret can find.
Yeah.
Both Tezzerets. Like the one thing to keep in mind is with Tezzeret... Agent of Bolas, his plus, which is reveal top five cards, get an artifact.
Yep.
Just maximum artifacts is important here.
Yeah, you need to have a high density so you can always hit.
And I'm already playing like the five planeswalkers and then four card draw spells.
So right.
Two Thirst for Knowledge.
Love Thirst for Knowledge.
Yeah, so good. Instant speed, draw three cards, discard an artifact or discard two cards.
Yeah.
Really good.
Excellent.
Serum Visions as a two of.
Yep.
Good with the amulets.
Yep.
Or not the amulet, the... decent with amulet, but better with
the
talismans.
Yes,
because you can on turn two talisman into Serum Visions.
I still think playing any deck with two Serum Visions is weird. It still feels weird to me, but
it's purely off of a 2-2 split between that and Thirst for Knowledge.
Thirst for Knowledge.
It's cheaper than Thirst for Knowledge, but not as good as Thirst for Knowledge.
I get that.
But it's cheaper. Like you have to balance it. I'd rather play four Thirst for Knowledge, but my deck is already high on curve, and having a low drop is important. But having too many non artifacts is not good.
I would almost be inclined to say cut down. I would almost be inclined to say find a way to cut down Thirst to one, play four Serum Visions, and then find other cards to cut to make up for it or something. It just feels weird to me if you're going to play Serum Visions. You want to have Visions on turn one almost every single time.
No, it's better as a late game thing here because you want to be searching for the combo piece you don't have.
Got
it's
it.
Not as much of a setup. It's more of a, I need to find the thing I need. Hmm. And being cheap in the early game is nice.
You decided to stay away from the sweet, sweet Pentad Prism into Tezzeret plan?
Yeah, I ditched the Pentad Prism.
It's such a sweet idea.
And then last but not least, two Tezzeret the Seeker. Literally, most likely, by the time you can cast a 5-drop, you have drawn a piece of your combo, be it Thopter, be it Foundry, be it Time Sieve.
Right.
You then, and probably cast it. So you play Tezzeret, you find one of the other pieces.
Sure.
And then you're tapped out. So, if Tezzeret survives, you win the game.
Right.
Because he tutors for the other half. So Tezzeret comes out at 4 mana, so he gets 2 2-drop searches, and it's really, really good.
Always been a big fan of Tezzeret. Always thought he was super sweet.
The
fact there's rarely been in Modern a combo or like infinite combo that is two artifacts.
Sure.
It's usually an artifact and something, which is why this card hasn't been like widely adopted. Obviously,
right.
This is going to see a lot more play now because it can get both halves of this combo.
Right. The other
yeah.
card that I considered is Clank Ironworks.
Clark Clan Ironworks.
Yeah, because it goes infinite mana.
Yeah.
With the combo.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not playing it.
Yeah.
Because it's a 4-drop.
Yeah.
But I could see the reason to do so.
You could play one or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
I like Time Sieve better.
Yeah, Time Sieve is definitely sweeter.
Sweeter. So I already talked about Academy Ruins and Tolaria West as far as lands go.
Yep.
Two Creeping Tar Pit.
Yep.
Mana Fixing and a creature.
Is that card like $25 now? Did I see that?
Yeah, it's not cheap.
Jeez.
Four Darksteel Citadel.
Yep.
So the other thing on Tezzeret Agent of Bolas, and the reason Tezzeret Agent of Bolas is really important, is yes, your combo can win, but there's a lot of graveyard hate out there. There's a lot of way to stop it. Scavenging Ooze is a huge problem. Tezzeret Agent of Bolas offers you a different out of attacking.
Yep.
So this allows you to attack without using your graveyard. It does still use an artifact, but a Darksteel Citadel is indestructible with Tezzeret, so it's definitely a powerful move. Two Inkmoth Nexuses.
Yep.
Once again, another Tezzeret play, another but it's a slightly Tezzeret better. Play. Yeah. It's better against something like Stony Silence.
Yeah.
And it just lets you kill them in two hits instead of five or four. A bunch of lands.
Yeah.
That are sweet. And then the one thing I do want to point out on the sideboard, and there's, you know, there's a lot of it is interaction, and then there's a few different tutor targets like Sundroplet or Chalice of the Void or Neil Spellbomb. But the important thing is an Ashiok, a Tasigur,
Yeah.
Because you want in your sideboard plan something against Graveyard Hate.
Right.
And just having threats that Graveyard Hate isn't good against is good.
Sure.
Or not Graveyard Hate. Just hate against your deck isn't good against is probably a benefit.
Hangerback Walker is so sweet in this deck.
Yeah.
Hangerback Walker is super sweet because of the counters, and then when Tezzeret turns it into a 5-5, the counters stay on the 5-5. Yep. That's awesome.
It also is great with Time Sieve. Like, I've definitely, like, early Time Sieved because I had just some Thopters out and this guy, and I sack them, and then I get an extra
get
turn
a bunch
and
of
get
one
to
ones.
The buy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Super good. Sweet. Yeah. Yeah, this deck seems like it's really fun. There's another direction.
There's a bunch of lists out there.
Well, and you can take Tezzeret in a different direction. So my Tezzeret list, we won't talk about now, but my Tezzeret list is older, but it's just playable now, not necessarily because of the combo, but more just because of the format's in a different place, and you can just play Tezzeret decks now. I would almost suggest that as a sideboard plan here, you can go with the Tezzeret, Darksteel Citadel, and Soul Artifact plan, which is its own more aggressive version, which I'm a big fan of, and I just think is just generally pretty awesome.
It's once again just another non-artifact spell.
Right.
And actually, like, I'm seeing a lot of lists online trying to do Tezzerator, and they're playing Jaces, or they're playing Liliana of the Veils,
yeah.
Or they're playing Ancestral Visions, and I think all three cards are wrong. I think Liliana of the Veil might be decent, but I also don't know how great she is right now.
Sure.
Just from the perspective of she's really bad against Thopter Foundry combo and she's really bad against Ancestral Visions. Both of those cards are really good against Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah,
Because like Liliana of the Veil could lock you out, but if you get your Ancestral Visions off, you're fine. And if she makes you discard your Ancestral Visions that you have in your hand, it's fine. And
the other part, so I will build mine, and we will talk about it later, but the other super cool thing you can be doing with Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas is if you are playing the Ensoul Artifact plan, you can stuff your deck with four Mishra's Baubles, and then you have the super, super cool thing of looking at the top four cards of your library on a +1, drawing a Bauble, playing it, and sacking it, so it actually effectively is a double draw the next turn off of the activation, or gives you the ability to play
a single draw because it cantrips.
No, I'm saying, but like you get two draws the next turn. But I'm saying, as opposed to drawing a card on four and not being able to play the card and having to wait on it.
Sure.
And then also, because it's a zero drop, if you do have that hand with the Ensoul Artifact in hand, you can attack on turn two for five.
Right.
By playing the zero on turn one. So that's like.
Yeah, I get it. I actually consider the.
Yeah. So that's more of the angle that I was taking. And those are more like the traditional classic Tezzeret lists where you. It used to be important to play Torpor Orbs in your main deck so you could beat Twin. It's not as important anymore, but definitely an interesting way to look at it. I have my own list that I will bring at some point, but I think we are nearly out of time. So.
Yeah, I think that's it for the episode. I want to thank all the people that submitted deck lists, even if we didn't get to use yours. There were some sweet lists. Some of them were more in line with decks I think we'll do in the future. I think there's a Judge Vine list, and I think we're going to do a whole Judge Vine list episode soon, so we didn't want to jump the shark.
Yeah, I think we want to save some. And next time we do a brew, we're going to try to do this about once a month. I think it's been a little longer than that since we did our last brew.
It was a month ago.
Okay, so by the time we come next month, we'll have like definitely some more inventive lists.
Yeah.
We're in a weird place right now because obviously to brew, you want to be using the new cards, and those cards
kind of
are
the requirement for today's episode.
Yeah, like, they're very powerful.
When I name this episode, it's going to be like brews with new cards or new card brews. Yeah, that rhymes better.
But in general, like when we brew, we try to come up with like interesting and different stuff. And not to say that these lists aren't interesting. They definitely are. It's just that you have to brew with these new cards. They're very
powerful. Ben doesn't like brews with good cards.
I just don't like to use the cards that everyone else is using. I want to try to come up with stuff that's different than people.
You're a hipster.
Yeah. Anyway, that's going to be that. So thanks for listening to the episode, guys. You're awesome. We have an extra episode coming up soon, a lore episode we're going to be recording.
Yeah, there will be a lore episode this
very
this
soon.
Month.
Yeah, probably like in the next week or two, something like that. I will be a fly on the wall just like you guys listening and asking questions. And aside from that, remember to find us on Twitter at the MMCast. I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I am at Kes Wiley.
Tweet at either of us personally and ask us questions or anything you have about what we're doing, and we will get back to you. We always do. And then lastly, of course, check out the Patreon. The more supporters, the easier it is for us to do more content, video content coming soon. Thank you, guys. Check out the Command Zone. We'll see you soon.
Yeah. Oh, also subscribe to our Twitch channel.
or my Twitch channel that we will be releasing our live episode feeds on twitch.tv/Ender574. Oh, and make sure to check out Trunk Club, our sponsor. All right. Bye, guys. Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.